Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
Faith here with a welcome toast. It was George Meredith who said, "Kissing don't last, cookery do."
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. We've got a whole pasta special. Back Pocket Pasta is the book we're going to focus on. And these are how to use leftovers to do quick dinners. A little bit of pasta, lots of things added, still good for you and so satisfying. So we can't wait to talk about that book. We're going to talk a little bit more about pasta and why it's gotten a bad reputation throughout the years. And we're going to make you feel good about eating your pasta. That's the other thing. My treasured food buddies are here, senior contributors Chris Prosperi and Mark Raymond. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Robin Doyen Aiken is on the show with us, as always, and she's our senior producer. All right, let's start with, it's grilling season. It is time to get the grill out and start to get it in shape. Sometimes it'll be a rainy weekend and you think, that's what I'm going to do. You're in, if you have a garage, you're in the garage. You're out on your back fire escape, wherever you live, and you're starting to get it all put together.
Mark's grilling apparatuses are in the garage, so I think he's not dusting off, right?
I've been grilling all year round.
You may be changing what you're grilling. Me. It's definitely time to get it out and start using it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dig it out.
Yeah, and I'm grilling vegetables. That's what I want.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's not in season yet. I'm grilling zucchini, just green
anything
vegetables.
You can get your hands on.
Eggplant. And what I love doing is grilling it all first and then cutting it into slabs, as big pieces as I can to grill. I toss them with olive oil, salt, pepper, and a little bit of curry powder because I like that little zing it has. And then I lay out the things on the grill. I grill them one at a time. So all the zucchini, all the eggplant. I even do tomato halves, onions, eggplant, like you said.
Yeah.
Asparagus. I'll even grill cauliflower and broccoli.
Oh, yeah.
And then once I get each grilled, I put them on a sheet pan. And then one by one, I chop them on a cutting board and throw them in a bowl. Drizzle balsamic, extra virgin olive oil, and fresh basil in it. And I have a grilled vegetable salad that you can eat just like it is, mix in with pastas, put under fish.
Throw some feta in.
It's a base that you can use for 800 other things during the week.
What a delicious sounding thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things that I like to do is grill lettuce, because lately in a couple of New York restaurants, they have tossed that on the plate.
Mm.
And it's reminded me, oh, yes, I used to do this last summer. There's no reason we can't start it now if you're an early griller. So just slicing that head of lettuce in half lengthwise and then brushing the sides just tossing the whole thing with some olive oil and salt and pepper and putting it right on the grill.
Ooh.
Until it starts to char a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you've got it's
so
beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Romaine works great, but I've also done frisé, you know, that frizzy stuff. Just think about the heartier ones. Escarole, look through your grocery, right? It doesn't have to be salad greens. It could be those other greens. And then you can chop them all up and mix them together.
And these things, you know, we keep coming back to pasta because these are great under fish. You could load a baked potato with these grilled vegetables. And that brings us back to pasta again. I guess we're going to go kind of pasta crazy on the show. Can we get into pasta for a second? Because it has gotten a bad reputation and people are so afraid of it. Now, Italian restaurants will say, that's not true. We've got a million people ordering pasta. But it's almost become a special occasion thing. These are empty carbs. So, Chris, in terms of how Europeans do pasta, what do they have to tell us? Because they will have pasta once a day.
Every day.
People aren't the size of houses. So.
No. And I learned it from my friend Nico, who lives on Lake Como. And he made a pasta every single day for lunch. And it changed the way I thought about pasta, because when I was making pasta before, pasta was the main ingredient. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of pasta, some sauce, and maybe some chopped up vegetables or meat or whatever in it. But the noodles or the pasta was the main part of it.
Right.
And the way Nico and his mom taught him this in Italy is the pasta is part of the dish, not the whole dish. So they chop up everything, like 50% vegetables, 50% pasta, if not more on the vegetable and meat side and less on the pasta side. So these pastas are loaded with pancetta and broccoli and zucchini and tomatoes.
But describe, for instance, the broccoli, because I've had this. When you do a broccoli pasta with a little red hot pepper
And garlic and olive oil.
It's the consistency of – you look at it and the broccoli looks like it's specks.
And we never do that here. We take these big chunks of broccoli and put them in our pasta, and then we just like cut them or force them in our mouth.
Exactly.
But there, Nico – and he's the one who showed me this. He minces it almost, and it becomes this little flecks of broccoli. Great for sneaking broccoli in.
For kids.
But before this, I would never eat broccoli in my pasta.
Wow.
But now, because of this sneaky method of basically just chopping it into small bits.
After it's cooked.
No, before. So he – see, and this is the thing.
How
so
does he cook
so
it
this
then?
Is what he does. Every single day, it's the same thing. He takes a big saute pan. He has his pot of water on the side boiling already. He throws his pasta, you know, gets it going, throws his pasta in, does that on the side. And then in a big wide pan, he takes a good glug glug of olive oil. And then pancetta, garlic, and onion. And he just minces those things up and throws it in the pan. And then he really just rifles through the fridge.
And sees
so,
what's available.
So it could be whatever was left over dinner, or he always has fresh vegetables. So whether it's zucchini or broccoli, he chops all that stuff up really fine. And not nicely, just sort of roughly. But he keeps chopping it until it's little bits. And then the garlic and the pancetta are cooked. He throws his vegetables and he starts sauteing it, getting it nice and toasty and caramelized. Then he'll throw in some fresh pepper or tomatoes. He always uses a little bit of stock. In Italy, you get great bouillon cubes, so he uses that. But here, we just use it out of the, you know, out of the carton. A little bit of broth goes in there.
Exactly.
And then
– goes into vegetable mixture.
It goes – yeah. So you cooked all your vegetables. You got them nice and caramelized. You hit it with some broth. Then your pasta's done. You strain your pasta. You mix that all in. You throw in some Parmesan cheese, and that's it. Bring it to the table.
You're saying, though, that in terms of numbers, that pasta – is far smaller in terms of portion of the dish than all that giant vegetable.
Yeah, so you have.
I think that's the key.
Yeah. That so if not 50%, more than 50% of this pot now is vegetables and pancetta and all this other stuff. And it doesn't matter. It could be chicken, it could be shrimp. Every day it changes to whatever he had in his fridge.
And he puts the pasta in that pan with all the vegetable mixture?
Always mixed all together, yep. And then he just – if it's the long like spaghetti, he just deals it out on each bowl. And then he takes the top, you know, the sauce and the vegetables and just dumps it all on top and boom, there you go. And every single day, it's the best pasta.
Doesn't that sound like a good idea?
Well, that's a great idea.
We're going to be talking about that next. Coming up in a little bit later on in the show, we have the author of Back Pocket Pasta. And these are what are called inspired dinners to cook on the fly. And I love this.
Great recipes.
So we're going to get to that. Now, for the devoted.
I like to call them, crazy.
No, the diehard, the passionate.
Go ahead.
We're talking to you right now.
For the religious. You make your own pasta, which they don't even do in Italy anymore, pretty much.
Oh, come on. They still do.
Not so much. You know, okay,
come on. On a Sunday afternoon and it's cold out and you're looking for something to do and you've got the day. My sister and I got together over the weekend, and we made homemade pasta. Now, I was given for Christmas this year, let me just say this, an attachment for my KitchenAid.
Oh, yeah, the electric one.
You know, stretches the pasta.
And rollers.
To thin it out. And then I've got a fettuccine cutter or a spaghetti cutter.
Nice.
Now, I've used this in the past with my mother-in-law would always make the homemade pasta, and she'd bring the dough over, and then I'd help her stretch it and cut it. And she makes amazing spinach noodles, which we all die for, with just a beautiful, simple, you know, tomato sauce with either meatballs or sausage. But this weekend, I was like, you know, my sister wanted to get together with the kids. I said, hey, why don't we make some homemade pasta? So I looked the recipe up online, and I had never actually made it myself. And it's so simple. You make a little well, you know, with about a pound, maybe 2 pounds of flour on your countertop. And in the middle, you break your eggs. You throw in a little kosher salt, a little olive oil. You scramble those eggs and slowly you just take in the flour into the dough and it thickens up slowly. And then you get it to a point where you can just knead it like a big dough ball. You have to let it sit for an hour. And then while this is happening, everybody's gathered in the kitchen talking to each other. It's just another reason to get everybody in the kitchen talking.
What about taste?
The taste is incredible. And to me, sometimes, you know, when things are processed, you just don't know exactly what's going into them. Although we do know we do have some great quality dry goods out there now. I mean, There's some great pasta that you can buy in the stores nowadays. And I'm not discouraging against that. I use that. But, you know, when you've got a little bit of time, it's a fun – it takes me back to when I was a young kid, about 7 or 8, and my grandmother used to actually – she didn't have, obviously, a KitchenAid. She would stretch out the dough, and then she'd put a sheet on her big bed – and she'd cut the dough by hand, and then she'd lay it all out on the sheet on her bed to dry out for the afternoon. Later in the day, she'd have the sauce cooking all day. We'd have a big pasta dinner. And that memory is just like burned in my history. So when I think about things like that, I'm like, you know, if we're making the dough in front of the kids and having a good time and having some conversation, it's something that they're going to remember as well.
Yeah, and I'll even say, because making my own pasta goes against everything I believe in, being the lazy chef. Because if you can get good one, why make it? But if you make this on a Sunday afternoon and you turn it into a family event, I think that transcends like making dinner, right? Mm-hmm. The way you were talking about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't about just the pasta.
No,
you could have easily got a good pasta and thrown it in a pot of boiling water and it'd be done with it. But you turned it into the event.
So inspired by my dear friend Chris Prosperi and all the dishes that he's done for us here, here I am. I'm making this pasta and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, wow, if I had a little fresh sage and I blended this in to the pasta and I made like a sage tagliatelle and then I made a lamb ragu and oh my God, there's so many different things I could do with this over the weekend. I can make this so much fun.
I'll give you a quick pasta tip from when I did make pasta in the days. If you take so you rolled out your sheets, right?
Yeah.
And you got it to the exact thickness you want it. You do another one just like it. So you have two equal sheets. Now your sage, your basil, all your thinner leafy herbs, take one sheet, lay it down on the table, and then take your leafy herbs and put them on top. Lay them nice and flat on top all the way across the whole sheet.
Yeah.
And then take the second sheet and lay it on top, right? And then feed it back through. It's amazing to see. It'll actually not just press it, but it'll actually stretch out the basil and sage leaves.
Wow.
Pretty cool to see.
This reminds me, this idea of gathering around making something, it's very reminiscent of inviting your friends over to do a pizza party or the taco party.
Right.
So whether we're talking friends as family or actual family, that gathering around this project that you make together and then sitting around talking until it's ready.
Right. Having just a couple glasses of wine.
And you can make it fun and do colors too, like you were saying. So before your guests arrive, cook off some spinach. Squeeze it dry, right? So take it in boiling water, blanch it, squeeze it dry, throw it in the food processor with a little bit of olive oil and pulse it into green paste. Put that in a little bowl. Then do the same thing with beets. That'll give you red pasta, right? If you know a good fish market, you can get squid ink.
Oh, yeah.
And you can mix that in. That'll be black pasta. And then you can have everyone make a color, especially if you get the kids involved, and then you put them all together at the end. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Goodness.
We don't have to wait so long. Coming up on the show, a couple segments, we're going to be talking with Kolu Henry, who is author of Back Pocket Pasta. These are how to do pastas really fast, using leftovers, using whatever's in the pantry, in the refrigerator, inspired dinners to cook on the fly. That's what we're going to get into. And with this philosophy that we've been talking about, whether we call it European or just a more sensible approach to pasta, it enables us to have it more often, where pasta is is the smaller ingredient, and all the rest of the stuff in the dish takes up the larger portion. But you can have pasta every day, Sophia Loren style, and she is our goddess here
yes.
on the show. So that's
yes, she is.
All right. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope, as always, you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry, because there are many. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
Bean. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Bean. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
Would you like on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week in your inbox? Well, that's how you find our terrific food, wine, and cocktails, and join us for an entertaining time together. that's how it works. We've got recipes, everything attached to this. All you do is sign up once. You go to our site, foodschmooze.org, enter just one thing, and then it just comes to you every week, and it means you can listen on your schedule. If you're in the car, you're working out, you're going for a walk, anything.
Cooking dinner. Making pasta.
Mm-hmm. Can't sleep in the middle of the night. listen to the Food Schmooze. All right, I can't wait, because in our next segment, we're going to talk to the author of Back Pocket Pasta. Mm-hmm. How to use the stuff in your fridge or on your shelves, in your pantry, as they say, in a luxurious way, to just throw together these instant pastas that are so good. And in our philosophy, the noodles are not the biggest feature in the dish, but all the other stuff. There's even a porchetta pasta.
So
we're going to get to that.
So good.
Hey, let's do some spring foods. Robin, you and I are fans of artichokes.
I do tend to order artichokes more in a restaurant because they're a little thorny and they're a little hard to work with and hard to clean. And there's a lot of prep that goes into getting that final reward of that delicious artichoke.
Absolutely.
You are the best setup person on earth.
I learned it from you.
So here's why we're talking about this, because we have two things. We're going to tell you about what you can do to make those fried artichokes that absolutely knock you out when you're in a restaurant. We're going to tell you how you can do it at home. And we're also going to show you how to clean an artichoke in our new video.
Nice.
Which is at our website, foodschmooze.org. And we have our very own Mr. Prosperi doing it for you.
A master.
The man.
The master of artichokes.
And
okay.
This is like one of those things where there is no kitchen tool that can help you do this any easier or faster. It's all about your hands and...
It's an art.
Yes.
It really
exactly.
is an art.
Oh, it's
why
just...
Okay. All those spiky leaves. Fun to eat if you're steaming an artichoke. Okay. Mm-hmm. To get to the center, and then the lemon and the butter thing goes on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The heart of the artichoke.
Right.
Okay, fine. Now, what happens if you want to clean the artichoke to get to that heart
yeah.
center
mm-hmm.
and then fry them all the right, way so the restaurants do this, in beautiful olive oil?
So this is the thing with artichokes. You buy this big thing and you're like, look at it. It's quite something
yeah.
looking at it. You're like, how do I even start? And then what you end up with is just this little heart, the yeah. center, which is the gold,
right?
And there's no easy way to get there. So two ways. One, like in restaurants, this is the way we pretty much always do it. We do it from raw. It's the hardest way, but it is the best way, because then you can take that heart and you can fry it or saute it or steam it or whatever. And the juices that come out of that blend into, like if you're going to put it in a pasta,
uh-huh.
you sort of saute it from uh-huh. raw in the stuff.
Fainting.
Yeah. If you had it in a restaurant, you know what I'm talking about. It is one of those special moments
mm-hmm.
when
yeah.
you have a fresh artichoke in something and you're just like,
olive
yeah.
oil.
Yeah,
oh,
olive
crispy.
Oil. Or just perfectly fried. Oh, heaven. Now, the other way to do it is you can steam it, or my friend Linda, she does it in a pressure cooker. So you kind of just trim it a little bit. You chop off the top, you chop off the bottom, and, you know, you can tweeze it a little bit with scissors and sort of cut off some of the sharper bits. And you throw it in a pressure cooker with some water. You put the lid on, you steam it for like 10 minutes. It comes out perfect every time. But it's so easy at that point because when it comes out, you put it on a little sheet pan or whatever, let it come to room temperature, and then it just the leaves just fall off.
Well, right? Why isn't that the easiest way?
It is an easy way, but the center now is cooked already.
It's different flavor.
It's a different flavor. It's still good. I'm not saying it's not good. But when you cook it from raw in a dish, there is some magic that happens.
Yeah. Is that steaming preparation? Is that what you would do if you were going to use that artichoke then to make that really great spinach artichoke dip?
Yes,
that
where people you stuff love? It and you eat the leaves?
Well, no, I mean like a spinach artichoke dip.
Where you cut it all up and chop it up with spinach into like a cheese.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. It's already
you would
cooked.
Steam it.
Yep.
You
okay,
steam
so it. We're going to go with you for just a moment on your trip of we're going to cut this artichoke up to get to the heart and we're going to do it raw.
Yep.
How do you do it?
So you lay it down on the cutting board and you cut the top of it off.
You lay it on its side.
On its side and you cut the top of it off. I think in the video we did about 3 inches off the top. Right. So now you've gotten closer to the heart, which is the gold you're looking for. Then I take a little knife and I start with the knife. You kind of cut and pull leaves
each
off.
Leaf.
Yeah. So you're getting the knife in, which you hold in one hand, in the palm of your hand.
The artichoke.
With the top facing up. And then you take the knife in the other hand and you just sort of pull and cut the leaves down, right? Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're sort of pulling it down and you're sort of turning it and you go all the way around it and you keep going until you get to that center.
Okay.
Right?
Now, do you wear gloves?
It's not like prickly as you think. It's not going to cut you. But
it's pretty sharp.
It's pretty sharp. But gloves will help. But I mean, the goal is to just do it carefully and spin it. And just it takes some work to get to. And once you get to that center, I peel the stem a little bit too with a knife. Or you can use a peeler, right, to peel that stem because that outer layer is a little chewy. So you want to get that off. And then cut it in half.
Cut the heart of the artichoke.
Yeah, in half. And then you get out the, you know, that choky part.
Furry stuff.
Yeah, and you can do that with the tip of a spoon or the knife. You kind of scrape it all out. And then that's it. You're done. You can cut it into quarters then. If you're going to store it, they suggest you store it in lemon and water because it can oxidize, which is turned brown. Mm-hmm. If it does, it's not a bad thing. It's just a color thing. It doesn't affect the flavor at all. And then you can do whatever you want
so
with these pieces.
That was just – how long do you think it takes you to do one artichoke to get – two halves of the heart.
Well, you can watch it in real time on the video.
I
mean, it's just about 2-3 minutes. But if you think about a restaurant, we get a 40-pound box of these things.
That's why you need prep cooks.
It's this box that's like the size.
And you get 40 little hearts.
And you get like a quart.
Yeah.
Now, let's do the cooking.
Okay.
Okay. So if I want that crispy, you know, I'll often go to an Italian restaurant that's good at this. If somebody says to me, oh, they make the best crispy artichokes, I will go, boom, make a beeline for that place and
Absolutely.
Order them. And so how do you do it?
Well, I've had it breaded or unbreaded.
Unbreaded.
Unbreaded. So you're going to cut them into quarters or eighths, depending on how big they are. There's many different sizes. You can get them from baby, which the hearts will be like, you know, maybe 2 inches around. Mm-hmm. And you can get them to where they're the large ones, and they'll be like 3 or 4 inches around. So cut them into bite-sized pieces, right, because you want to be able to just take them in your fork and pop them in your mouth. And then all I do is I get my olive oil very hot.
How much olive oil in the pan?
I like to pan fry them. So you look at your artichokes, you want the oil to come up about halfway up the artichoke piece. So maybe a half an inch of oil in the bottom, right?
Got it.
And you want to get that nice and hot, 350 degrees optimal. I use a mixture of cornstarch and corn flour or cornmeal, and I sort of roll it in that so it gets a nice little crispy crust on the outside.
Mm.
And then one by one, I drop them in the oil, very carefully turn them, put them on paper towels, and then eat them as fast as they come out.
And when they're golden, it's time to come out.
And then right onto a little plate with paper towels to soak up the excess oil. And then I season them with salt and pepper. And like I said, you eat them as fast as they come out of the man.
You're killing me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you can just, if you like a little crunchier, mm-hmm. just use cornmeal. But I like that combination of cornmeal and cornstarch.
Can you just use cornstarch?
You can just use cornstarch. It's a little cakier, I guess. Uh-huh. If you want that real crunchy bit kind of thing going on with it, I like the combination of
Someone
both.
Told me you can use chestnut flour.
You can use chestnut flour.
Oh,
you
that would
use,
be good.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can use – in Italy, they just use regular flour.
Chestnut's got to leave a distinctive flavor to it, too.
I haven't used much.
What if you use no flour? Will they still brown in the olive oil?
They'll brown up, yeah. But they, again, I love that. There's something about those little bits that get golden brown and charred that just add to. I'm telling you, eat these like – you pop them like candy and then they're gone. You're like, that was the whole box.
Somebody has to tell me why no one has invented – something that will make this faster.
Yeah, make it faster. Make
why would no one invent this? This seems.
Or I would even be okay with a good canned artichoke.
But only in Spain could you get that.
Yeah, and they're good. And I mean, but those are more for salads. Those are they're not going to fry those, right?
Because they've been
those
soaking already, in water.
Yeah, they're
they're
already cooked.
$60 a can. They're geniuses at canning things in Spain. I'm not kidding. It's better than fresh things. I don't know what they
do
over there.
I've had them fresh in olive oil, too. You can get them in some markets, and boy, those are good, too.
Yeah.
Right? So after they steamed,
then
they put them in olive.
Them?
No, they put them in olive.
But can we fry them at home? Oh, they're steamed already.
Yeah, but see, those aren't – that's the difference. That's what I'm saying. When you want to fry them, you want to do them fresh.
Yeah.
So you have to do that work part, and you'll see that in the video.
What in the world could we – let's just invent something right now. You know, obviously someone will take our idea, but we're just going to put it out in the world. What could we do?
A small handheld machete.
How about sounds dangerous?
How about a sanding machine? You know the sanding wheel?
A belt sander?
A lathe. You're talking like a lathe like for turning
you
wood.
You just hold it
with a chisel on the end and the leaves go flying.
They got to make an adapter for the KitchenAid. They got to have one.
You know how an apple corer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too. Yeah.
Well, you press it down and everything just falls away. Isn't there some simple device?
Well, that's the thing that these things don't, like I said, and you'll see it in the video.
Really
they
unique.
Don't fall away. You've got to kind of rip them
off. An apple skin and those sections don't fall away.
No, but
you have
softer.
You press down. It's quite hard. I mean, it takes some strength. You press down. Many sizes of apple somehow work with that corer. Why can't somebody do an artichoke?
I think we go high tech. How about laser? Right? And you just sort of burn them off. Right?
Be interesting.
Well, then we're talking about the creme brulee torch.
No, I think a laser because then it would cut too.
If you
want to get really crazy, you can do high pressure water. You know how they can cut through wood with high pressure water?
Oh.
Yeah, that's probably dangerous. Though.
Yeah,
probably not a good
somebody's going to hurt
lose
themselves.
A finger. Yeah, yeah. No. I just don't
Are
know.
You a technician and listening to this show right now?
Is there an idea you
Are you
come
an
up
inventor?
With?
Would you
Help.
Please write to us
and tell
on
us
Facebook
how to do this?
And tell us what is the fastest way to peel a fresh artichoke to get to the heart so we can fry them fresh. You could easily line them up in a slow cooker.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. But that's, again, it's cooked again.
But
it's
cooked.
Right.
And Chris maintains that it's not going to taste quite the same when you fry it as when it's dead fresh.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is – I like
an oxymoron
right there. This is crowdsourcing. I love – you know, there are people that have done this a lot more than I because I'm not a big – like, I don't use a lot of them because of all those reasons. But if there is someone out there that knows a better way than the knife, maybe there's a tool, maybe there's just a technique I haven't thought of yet. I would love to know.
You know,
I'm telling you, in all the restaurants that I've ever been a part of or seen, it's always that person in the back room with the knife and the box of artichokes.
Yes, makes
and,
me think.
You know, and there was a restaurant in Hartford where the father of the owner would do it. And I would say, hey, can you show me how to do that? And he's like, well, if I teach you how to do it, then you're going to have to do it from now on.
So, you're like, never mind.
All right, well, I'm good. You keep doing that.
Well, is there a way – I'm trying out another idea. When you try and take the skin and char the outside of a black pepper, you're holding it over the flame of the gas stove lots of times. Is there a way to burn the outside off by holding it with some kind of device over the flame of a gas stove?
No, I don't think so.
Roasted pepper, you're still cooking though, right? That's the problem.
Yeah,
you're still,
the inside's cooking.
If you do cook it, it peels much easier. There's no question. And you can par cook it, so you don't have to cook it all the way through. But I'm telling you, I've tried all these things where you cook it like almost all the way, and you get to peel it, but still the center's not quite the same.
What if you put the whole thing into a deep fryer, singe the outside and the inside, and then peel the outside off? Would that work?
Messy. Might work, but it would be messy. Oil would be in all the crevices and...
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, Faith Middleton Puchmoos.
Yes, give us ideas.
On Facebook, if you have a way, the fastest way you know of, to peel a fresh artichoke so that we can fry them fresh in beautiful olive oil, please tell us.
I'd eat them every day, wouldn't you?
I
would eat them. Or go out and invent something.
Not even just fried. I put them in pastas. I would use them all the time if I could just figure out
I would have them as my go-to vegetable every minute of every day.
Yeah, if
in
it
the
wasn't
morning,
the
afternoon, and at night. It'd be my midnight snack. Salt and lemon juice and crispy artichokes.
I love it.
Does not get better. Okay, so we're celebrating spring foods, and we're getting right now into this book in our next segment, Back Pocket Pasta with Kalu Henry. These are inspired dinners to cook on the fly. Instant pasta from right out of your refrigerator or your pantry. And this is not the weight-gaining kind of pasta because the proportions, meaning the added ingredients, are in larger amounts than the pasta noodles themselves. And yet you can have pasta every day this way. It is such a fantastic thing to do. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of this show, The Puchmoos Party, every week. And to find all of our curated food, wine, and cocktail recommendations, go to puchmoos.org. Back Pocket Pasta is next, and we'll be right back.
Onward blossom, I would steam you gently. Show you my devotion, dear, if only you would let me. I send to you this lover's note, my secret hope, my artichoke. My artichoke.
This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, the Hamptons, of course. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. And to hear this show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. And of course, you can talk with us on Facebook too. Search Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Okay, here we go. We're going to start with what we've been promoting all during the show. I can't wait. And it's this book called Back Pocket Pasta. As much a mindset as it is a cookbook, this book shows how a well-stocked kitchen and a few seasonal ingredients can be the driving force behind delicious weeknight meals. Pantry staples, a handful of items to help you up your dinner game, give you a head start come 6 p.m. so you can start cooking in your head on the way home from work or whatever you're doing. For instance, if you know that you have a tin of anchovies, a hunk of Parmesan, and let's say panko breadcrumbs, you can pick up fresh kale to make what turns out to be, from this book, Tuscan kale Caesar pasta. This is really such a good idea. Or, let me try another one. If you have capers, red pepper flakes, and a lemon, you can make linguine with quick chili oil and capers. These are kind of genius flavor combinations. That's why we like this book. Pasta should not get the deep six because people are carb phobic. if you do your portions right, I don't mean just a little tablespoon of pasta. I'm talking about a significant amount, but up the other ingredients. You, like the Europeans, can have pasta every single day. God bless if you
agreed. Lorraine.
Okay, let's meet the creator of this book. You may remember Kalu Henry from Bon Appetit. Her writing has appeared all over the place, including Wine Enthusiast, and she is a food lover. And I think this was a great idea for a book. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be talking with all of you.
The book is called Back Pocket Pasta, Inspired Dinners to Cook on the Fly. I want to start with one, Smoky Garganelli alla Vodka. So this is pasta alla vodka. See this in so many Italian restaurants. I don't know. Is this actually served in Italy, or is this one of our American creations?
No. And I'm so happy that you picked this one first, because I have a real soft spot for old school Italian joints, American Italian, and they do not make it in Italy. You're correct. But I wanted to try to figure out a way to elevate it, because people have such a soft spot for it. So I added nduja, which is a spicy, spreadable sausage from Calabria, and it just kind of dissolves into the sauce, and it leaves behind this really yummy, smoky pork flavor without changing the consistency of the cream sauce and, of course, the vodka.
So, Kalu, let me jump in and explain to people. Nduja, N-D-U-J-A. That's a spreadable salami from Calabria in Italy. Where would somebody get that? And if they can't get it, what would you substitute?
You can definitely get it at any specialty market. I believe Zimmerman's actually, and Amazon will probably deliver it to you. I think I actually, in a pinch, have ordered it from Amazon. If you can't find it, you can substitute just regular chili flakes. It won't give you that porky flavor, but it will give you the heat that you're looking for.
Okay.
I mean, I guess you could probably use bacon if you wanted to, but the thing about the nduja is the consistency, which I like.
Yeah. So the garganelli pasta is like little tubes. We'll put it that way. So let's pretend that the pot of pasta water is going, and you've got the pasta in there, and it's starting to cook. Now we take out a skillet, right, and add some olive oil and some onion and cook it for a few minutes, and then in comes the garlic, and then here comes the nduja. You're stirring it up in a saute pan. Very simple. So it's about 2 minutes, and then you add the vodka to the skillet, okay?
Yep, you have to do that.
In comes the tomatoes for about 10 minutes, salt and pepper, a little touch of cream. If you are a fan of penne alla vodka, you know there's a little touch of cream in it. And then into that saute pan, you add the grated cheese and the pasta to the skillet and start tossing. And then into the bowls it goes. So there's an example of a really quick, really simple restaurant dish.
Yeah.
Don't forget, if you don't have that special nduja thing, you could use hot pepper if you've got a little extra sausage around. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could be crazy if you had pancetta, whatever's around.
Exactly. That's the entire philosophy of the book. Just let your spirit be your guide.
So I'm glad we started there. Is everybody hungry here in the studio?
Absolutely.
I'm getting hungry. I'm getting hungry now.
So I'd like to go to one. It's probably the one I order most at Italian restaurants, and that's puttanesca.
I love puttanesca.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite sauce.
Puttanesca is kind of the most wonderful example of pantry pasta. It has capers in it. It has anchovies. It has tomato in it. All of these things that hopefully, if you read the pantry section of the book, you'll be ready to go and all stocked up. And it comes together quickly. And this actually is a recipe based on my grandmother's. So I had that as a guide.
So olive oil, garlic, some anchovy fillets that melt into the sauce. And so it's not, you know, if you go to some places and they'll give you a Caesar salad and then they say, do you want it with anchovies? And what they do is they just lay the anchovies on the top of the greens. And I think, what are you doing? This is not what these are here for. Anyway, it melts into the sauce. A lot of times you don't even know that it's there. It's a back note.
Yeah.
Tomato paste or a can of San Marzano tomatoes because they're sweeter and very tasty. Black oil cured olives, capers, oregano, and the linguine, some flat leaf parsley if you want.
Oh, yeah.
And it all, some people will add hot peppers to this as you do.
Yep.
Oh, it is one of the best. Now, this makes it hard for me, Clue. It's hard for me to do the proportional thing when I'm eating.
When you have that sauce, I'll have three more helpings, please.
Okay, so that recipe, I'm excited to say, is at our website, foodschmooze.org. And there's information about Clue Henry's book, Back Pocket Pasta, How to Use Your Pantry and Refrigerator Items to Do These Inspired Pasta Dishes. Clue, do you agree with us that the extra ingredients along with the pasta really take up the majority of the bowl? The pasta itself is more like the flavoring agent, and that way your body can tolerate having pasta every day without gaining weight.
I 100% agree. Pasta has gotten a bad rap over the last couple of years. It kind of bums me out a little bit because Italians have been eating it forever and they're doing just fine. But yes, the sauce carries the flavors board and the noodle sort of this really beautiful canvas. If your proportions are, you know, in check, then you can eat pasta. Completely agree with you on that.
Can we go to your next one? And this is on our website too. Chris just made this for us, the Easter ham carbonara.
So good.
This was, you said it was so
easy. You watched
easy.
Me make it. It was just in minutes.
Okay, so you had leftover ham.
Well,
okay.
I bought a ham steak, but the idea is to make this right after Easter and you have big chunks of ham.
But why not on any weeknight have a ham steak last in the refrigerator for about 100 years?
And every supermarket carries them, right?
Absolutely.
I cut it into half-inch pieces. Then I put a pot of water on for the pasta. I put olive oil in a pan, and I got my ham nice and toasty and crispy.
Chunked it
up. Yeah, about half-inch chunks. Mm-hmm. It was so hard not to stop there and just eat the ham right out of the pan, because then they were crispy like that. They were so good.
It was good.
You took a piece. I know you did.
I ate more than one piece. Okay. I mean, that's the start of it. And then once you get the ham nice and crispy, in a bowl, you mix together what your sauce ingredients are going to be. And that's a couple eggs, an egg yolk, Pecorino Romano cheese, a pinch of salt and pepper, and you whisk it all up in a bowl. You get your pasta now that's cooked. You throw it in the pan with the ham. Take your egg mixture with the cheese and you just rapidly pour it in there and like scramble it. I just used a big spoon and kept mixing it and mixing it.
So you're tossing. And what you're doing is trying to keep the egg from scrambling.
Yeah. And I put a little bit of the pasta water in as well. Save that pasta water, about a half a cup of it goes in the pan. That helps keep the sauce nice and
creamy.
Thinner, so it's not so goopy with the egg.
So the one thing that's missing so far is the peas.
Then
because
you add
that's
the peas, and then some parsley.
And there you go.
And I put a little cheese on the side, and we all like a little crushed red pepper flake on the side as well, so we sprinkled that on top. And,
yes, we seem to do that with everything.
Man, that was a good pasta.
Delightful.
Did you like it? Wasn't that good?
Oh, it was so delicious.
Clue, we love this recipe.
So glad you enjoyed it.
Easter ham carbonara. It doesn't even have to be attached to Easter. It is so easy, as we know, to go out and get one of those ham steaks at the supermarket.
Chop it up, you're done.
It's like essentially adding cheese and peas and some egg.
Yeah. Adding cheese and peas. That's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
Cheese and peas.
Cheese and peas.
And I like it too because who doesn't? I always have a bag of peas in my freezer. It's one of my staples.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to porchetta pasta, which made me...
Come on.
I know, Mark, just for you. Okay, can we talk for a second, Clue, about what kind of pantry items are you supposed to have to be able to do these kinds of pastas? That in Duya, I don't have that in my pantry.
And that's okay. That's probably the one thing that you don't have. So I put together an overview of what would be beneficial for a home cook to have. Obviously, olive oil is always a great place to start.
Okay, so that's a good idea. If you're in the pantry, a pantry sounds so luxurious. So in the pantry, and then we'll do in the fridge. So in the pantry, you go to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx and you get olive oil, big quantities because you use it a lot. And then garlic and capers and nuts and canned San Marzano tomatoes and crushed red pepper flakes, breadcrumbs, white vermouth, chicken stock, salt, cans of tinned fish, white beans. Now, that's not super expensive.
And tomatoes, you buy them when they're on sale just because they're on sale. Always. And you always have tons of them.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have the white vermouth, but it's not expensive, and I think I'm going to get that.
Okay. I'm a martini drinker, so that's not a problem.
Oh, okay.
Always around. Always available.
So, Kalu, let's do what's in the refrigerator and see how we all stack up here. So, onions, carrots, and celery. Herbs, you buy them all the time. Parsley is always there, basil, chives, mint, oregano, rosemary, tarragon, thyme, and sage. You know, the thing about those is in the wintertime, those can be pretty expensive because it's like $5 or $6 for one of those little tiny packages, and then you right. don't know what to do with it after that.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's a little... She's got a tip here. But
if you have everything else in the pantry, then the only thing that you need to buy is a bushel of herbs, then it's still going to be an economical meal and a splurge, and it will really give you some brightness in the winter.
Okay, I'm going to go with you.
I vote for the window box, though. Window boxes are so easy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the only plant I can keep alive.
What plant you can keep alive?
The herbs.
The herb box. I have a window box in my kitchen window, the window that's right above the sink. And when I'm there, it's like, oh, yeah, the herbs, and I water them.
But you can go to the grocery store, and they have them in the planters now, and you can just put it in a window box.
Why am I not doing that? Okay, I'm going to do that.
Don't go crazy. I used a milk carton. I didn't have anything.
Loving this.
You used a milk carton.
I used a milk carton.
I use the wine box. Is that
See,
okay?
Wine box would work too.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Anchovy paste. Now we're in the fridge. Anchovy paste. Yep. Leafy greens. It might be arugula, spinach, mustard greens, escarole, pea shoots, kale. And there you go. That's the fridge. And this is stocking up, and you will always have something to make. Oh, you know what? We want some tomato paste also, and cheeses. Mm-hmm. We got to have cheeses in
there. Got to have cheeses.
Always have some.
And we must have bacon or pancetta, and we need butter.
Mm-hmm.
And so in all those citrusy things.
Yeah.
So that's a basic. You can kind of have one or two of these items in the refrigerator at all times.
I guarantee if you make five of these recipes, by the time you're done with five, you are now going to be able to just walk up to your pantry, walk up to your refrigerator, and like I do, just make a pasta.
That's exactly it. That is the biggest takeaway. And I want people to feel confident in the kitchen so they can do exactly that. You know, look around, see what works together, and then create your own back pocket pasta. You nailed it.
It is possible to do a porchetta. So in other words, roast a pork shoulder with all those beautiful spices on it. We're talking about fennel and garlic and all that.
Mm-hmm.
For say, a Sunday meal or a Saturday meal, of course there's going to be some left over.
Mm-hmm.
This is Kalu Henry's idea. What can you do with that leftover to make the most beautiful pasta and really fast? We have this at our website. Here is how to do porchetta pasta. So explain it to me. You've made porchetta, right?
Luckily for me, I live in Hudson, New York, and Mona Talbot, there's a beautiful cheese and meat store called Talbot Narding. She actually makes porchetta. So you can buy it by the pound. And you can also in Whole Foods as well. But honestly, you could use like a leftover pork shoulder to your point. Any leftover meat would work in this situation. I ended up buying the porchetta because at the time when I was making this pasta, we were going through a kitchen renovation. I wanted to make pasta, and I brought the porchetta over to my neighbor's house, and this beautiful meat sauce evolved, and it cut down on a lot of the Sunday sauce steps that you would generally take. It was sort of my way of trying to make it simpler and more straightforward.
So let's imagine that you have, you're lucky enough to be next to a market that makes porchetta or some person who lives next door. And if not, you made your pork roast. Okay.
Right.
So let's just say that it works like that. Walk us through it, Kalu. So the water is on, pasta's cooking.
You're heating oil, and then you're adding the porchetta and just letting it all come together. I have a little bit of red wine in there so you can deglaze, and you're scraping up the brown bits from the bottom of the pan because you don't want to let those go to waste. And then you add the tomatoes and the parsley and just kind of let it all simmer together and let those flavors meld.
Just 12 minutes.
12 minutes.
So
I got that kind of time.
Porchetta, but, you know, it's all going to come together pretty quickly.
And then that pasta, when it's ready, goes into that pan. And you could add a little touch more pasta water if it's a little too thick. And there you go. You sprinkle cheese on the top, and you've got porchetta pasta, and that's at our website with information about how to get this book. And that's Food Schmooze, backpocketpasta.org. The book is called Back Pocket Pasta, Inspired Dinners to Cook on the Fly, and the author is Clu Henry. Oh, what a good time we've had with this. You make me want to have pasta every single day.
I know.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, you really do. Just, a nice portion with all this stuff in it. Maybe I'll stop and buy one thing on the way home or on a Sunday. Look at your book and think to myself, what do I need? Let me get a few things in here. There you go. I'm set for the week. Think about, if you have kids, think how happy they would be. Boy, do they love pasta, as I do. Kid at heart, right here.
Absolutely. Okay.
Everyone.
Clu, thank you very much for being on the show. I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. You know the slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, don't want the party to end? Well, neither do we. Talk with us anytime online at foodschmooze.org.